Later in the program, Diane Karp will be with us speaking of the arts. And I'd like now to welcome Linda Siegel with today's legislative update. Welcome, Linda.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
So this week, we're now doing the legislative update once a week. We've done all sorts of two, three times a week, but right now it's Friday from 8 to 8:30. So what has happened this week? Let's start with driver's licenses, which seems to be a topic that we can never get away from.
Well, we had a couple of bills that would have ended the undocumented immigrant driver's license.
Would have repealed the bill, yeah.
Yes, and both of those, after, about 6 hours of public hearing, both of those were tabled. So those two bills are dead. There are other bills that propose changing the driver's license. There's one for I don't know if it's been introduced yet, a driving certificate. It may not have been introduced yet, but the bills that were for outright repeal at the moment all are dead in the House.
All right. Hey, just as a point of fact, how long do people have to introduce bills in the first place? There's a 60-day session, which is what we're in. Can you introduce a bill on day 59?
Yes. No, you can't. You can only introduce on day 30. So
okay.
You can introduce up until the middle of the legislative session. But
okay.
There is a way to get around that. And a lot of legislators introduce what are called dummy bills, and they are blank, empty bills, and the title is just something like public welfare.
Right.
And you see a whole bunch of bills by each legislator, four or five bills by each legislator in leadership usually, that are just blank. And they keep those bills there so in case they realize they should have introduced something, they can just pull down one of those dummy bills and drop in the information.
Just write it in with pen in the last minute.
Well, they do have to go to the bill drafter, but they just drop it in, and then the bill is suddenly moving, but it still has the title of for the public welfare. It doesn't,
right. It,
you don't know what it is by the title, so whenever we see these dummy bills moving, we have to go, I wonder what that is, and go in and read it to make sure it's not something that people either like or want to kill. Usually they're
right.
Bills we want to kill.
And so there's what we might call nefarious sneakiness that happens.
On occasion, can you believe it?
In politics? Why? Shocked, I tell you. So, driver's license repeal bills are dead yet again. And what about abortion? Were there some anti-choice bills? Or
yesterday there were three bills up in the House Public Affairs Committee dealing with parental notification, with what we would think is a fairly onerous bill called the Women's Right to Know Act, which required that the Department of Health produce materials about abortion, and that you have to provide that information to the woman beforehand, and they have to go off and think about it and then come back. And then another one a few days ago, crimes against unborn children. We already have a law in New Mexico about killing people, but anyway, all three of those bills are tabled, which means they're dead for the session. Unless something nefarious happens.
Right, like a dummy bill.
Or like in what happens occasionally, but not very often in the House of Representatives, is where people will try to get enough votes to pull a tabled bill out of committee and bring it down to the floor.
Is that what we have heard called blasting?
Blasting,
it's
yes.
Blasting. Okay.
Blasting a bill out of committee.
All right. So no driver's license repeal, no abortion limitations, same-sex marriage.
Well, isn't that interesting? A constitutional amendment introduced by Brian Egoff of Santa Fe passed out of Public Affairs Committee yesterday. And what that, we've talked about constitutional amendments before, but what that does is if it passes the House and the Senate, then the governor doesn't have to sign it. It goes on the ballot in the very next election. So if this were to pass, it would go on the ballot in 2014, in November of 2014, which is all the statewide elections.
Now, we haven't been able to pass even a domestic partnership bill.
No, we certainly haven't. And I'm not sure this bill will pass, and it is concerning if it did get on the ballot, I'm not sure that New Mexicans are quite ready for same-sex marriage, although the numbers are really trending up.
Yeah. And what do they look like?
Well, in the country, when you put all the surveys that they've done of the United States, we're above 50%. But then when you go to different states, you'll have your conservative states where it might be 30% supporting same-sex marriage. And we don't have any current polling yet in New Mexico.
Ah, I bet we will soon, especially if this passes.
I bet we will.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, those trends, in a way, it's such a bore to have to go through this year after year, because we know, demographers know, people observing politics know, that within 40 years, none of this is going to be an issue.
Well, hopefully in they say 10 or 20.
I mean, I think they said the last state to go is going to be either Alabama or Mississippi.
Right.
And at that point, it will be a resolved issue, and anybody will be able to marry the person that they love, and that's it. And yet, we have to go through this whole lugubrious nonsense.
Lugubrious, yes, definitely. It's, we can't, you know, all of these things are cultural changes and generational changes, and you look at the major social movements, it all happened with different people becoming the voters and younger people involving, and we know that under 30, people go, what, who cares who you marry?
Right.
So, yes, it's going to change, not fast enough for many of us, but it will be different soon.
Okay, now, genetically modified food labeling.
That was Peter Wirth's bill, and it was a simple bill. All it said was that if you had any of that product in your product, you had to label it. And it, in the first committee, Senate Public Affairs, it got a do not pass. And what happens with bills is they get reported. No, it didn't get a do not pass. I think it got a no rec, a no recommendation, which means it would go to the next committee. So what happened was it got reported down to the Senate, and they refused to accept the committee report, which is really unheard of, because that's just sort of a perfunctory act that they do. They hear the committee report, and that's the end of it. So they refused to accept the committee report, which means the bill is dead when you don't accept the committee report. When a bill passes, or a bill gets a do not pass, or a bill even gets a do pass with a no rec, it's reported out to the whole Senate or House so that it can go on to the next committee. So everybody knows, okay, that bill's moving and it's going on to the next committee. And when you fail to accept a committee report, it means that it's not going on to the next committee and that you're not accepting the report. And so there was a whole hoopla on the Senate floor, and then they decided, well, we'll just put it in a different committee. We'll send it to corporations where it is sure to die. But then what happened is that they realized that they had done it all wrong, and...
Who's they?
The Senate.
Okay.
The senators. Because there's procedure. There are rules.
Oh,
the
right.
Senate follows Mason's rules. And you're supposed to adhere to those rules. And they couldn't not accept, they couldn't say we're not going to accept the committee report and then refer it to another committee. So the bill is totally dead.
Oh my goodness.
Not going anywhere.
Unless somebody writes another one.
Yes, introduces another one or later on sticks it in a dummy bill.
Right, exactly. Ah yes, the dummy bill. Now we've all been educated on this particular matter. And, all right, so moving on from that, that is very odd. And what did the citizens have to say about it? Were there citizens there commenting on this?
There were people who were supportive of the bill who were quite disturbed.
Yeah. Labeling does seem pretty straightforward. Okay, so let's see. There are bills that bar differential pricing services because of gender? What's going on there?
This is a very interesting one that one of our new senators has introduced, and it all started out because he noticed that in hair salons, there were different prices.
That is so true.
For haircuts, depending on whether you're a man or a woman. And so this is a bill that tries to address that by saying you can't do a price of a product or a service based on gender. You've got to do it based on, well, is it a short haircut? Is it a long haircut? Are you getting a dye job or what?
Right. Well, dye jobs always cost
more.
Well,
yeah, but I bet they're cheaper for guys if they have less hair.
Well, the argument I've heard for differential pricing is that dudes need to get their hair cut all the time, whereas we go in once every 6 months.
I don't know. Is that how often you go in, Mary Charlotte?
Yes.
Liz, I know, goes in every month. But, well, I think the whole idea of it is set a price based on how long it takes you to cut the hair, not whether it's a female head or a male head. And, of course, it applies to other things. And the bill passed the first committee.
All
so
right.
It's a good thing.
So it's an unusual non-discrimination bill.
Yes, one that none of us had thought of. So,
all right. I thought of it, but I never thought of a legislative solution.
Yeah.
All right, so there's another bill, and this is a very interesting one, that would prohibit animal killing contests.
Yes, Representative Nate Cody, who's from the Las Cruces area, introduced that bill, and I think that's come about from the coyote killing contest that we had just a few weeks ago. And this bill would prohibit any kind of contest like that. And of course, the people who hold those contests are very upset about that bill. This is one of those bills that's kind of in the realm of the cockfighting bill and the dog fight bills, and we have bills every year to ban certain breeds of dogs, and it's just, they're very emotional and controversial because there are people that are really adamant and on both sides.
And so, let's see, what kind of support does this bill have that would prohibit animal killing?
Well, I think that the animal killing bill is certainly supported by the different humane societies and by the animal protection organizations. And then we've already seen the gun owners and the gun shops. I think it was a gun shop that supported this or even promoted this animal, the coyote killing.
Yeah.
So those groups are lining up for and against the bill. And that I'm assuming that the first hearing on that will be lively. You know, when we have these really controversial issues, the hearings often end up outside of the little hearing rooms. Because your typical hearing room in the Capitol might hold the regular hearing rooms 40 people. And when you've got 100 or 200 people on each side of the issue, like we did on the gun, background check gun bill last week or a week ago, then you have lots and lots of people come and they have to move the hearings down to the floor, the chamber of the House or the Senate. And that may happen with the animal killing bill too.
And that, you know, that is such an interesting thing because it really goes down to the deepest moral, it's one of the deep moral issues that divides us, namely, does wildlife have a right to live?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here are the really controversial issues. Abortion issues, gay rights issues, animal issues. Those, it's interesting, gun ownership issues. These are the ones where hundreds of people email, call, and come to the Capitol.
Right. Now, and you know what? They all have to do with gender relations.
To some extent,
they all have to do with gender relations. Yeah. Should man be the warrior?
Mm-hmm.
And should he have complete rights as the head of the household? And should he dominate the family and the society? That's really what it's about.
The patriarchy.
Yeah, it's really about that. So, okay. And speaking of which, there's also a carrying guns in schools.
Yes,
bill.
One of our senators from over in the East Mountains has introduced a bill to allow one person in the school to carry a gun. So I guess if the perpetrator comes in, you run and call that one person to come with their gun. It sort of reminds me of Andy in Mayberry, where the one police officer got to carry a gun, but he only had one bullet in it.
Very interesting.
It's kind of, you know, it's everybody's trying to figure out solutions to this problem when the solutions aren't at the surface level. They are at the core of our society.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're not, it's too hard to solve the problems at the core of our society. So let's give everyone in the schools a gun, and that's how we can protect our kids. And it's just,
let's give one person a gun, make sure everybody knows
who
it is,
one is,
including the potential shooters. I mean, I don't know. I've watched enough crime shows on TV to know that that's probably a non-starter.
Yeah, it's probably not the best idea, but we're just grasping for any solution, and it's not going to happen.
It is very difficult. And I think it's... I haven't yet done a show on guns and all these issues because I'm kind of waiting to digest it all myself and to try to understand and see who's making the most kind of comprehensive and thoughtful commentary. But it will come. Stay tuned. We'll do a show one of these days.
Well, along those lines, of course, the Albuquerque Public Schools have introduced a bill to allow the school district to have its own police department. And they've had police officers on their campuses for quite a few years, but it's been the sheriff's department who authorizes those police officers. And so APS, Albuquerque Public Schools, wants to have their own actual police district. I mean, they want to be able to supervise the police instead of having the sheriff do it. And that, you know, that is not unusual in large school districts in big cities. I lived in Houston for a while, and they had their own police department for the school district.
And as Fred Nathan talked to us about, he's the director of Think New Mexico. The most successful and least violent schools are small schools, and there are groups of people within New Mexico who are really trying to promote small schools as opposed to these big, giant kind of security complex schools that we do have at least some of here in this state.
Yes, yes.
Okay, speaking of schools, education budget.
Yeah, that is really the main focus right now of the two education committees. There's an education committee in the House and an education committee in the Senate, and they write the entire education budget called House Bill 3. And they're working on that every day. They're looking at the different departments and the sections within PED and looking at the funding formula and trying to figure out and propose a budget which will then go over to House Appropriations and be rolled into the big House Bill 2 budget that we talk about all the time.
And are there any differences? I mean, we certainly talk about education and we talk about reading and whether flunking students will help them learn to read and all that kind of thing, but what's going on with the budget that's different from any other year?
Well, it's not particularly different. The whole issue between the administration and between the legislature is really about the above the line and below the line. I think we might have talked about that at the last week. And what most of the Democrats in the legislature are looking for is above the line appropriations, so that everything that gets appropriated to the public education department, the flow through to the schools, will be included in the funding formula, which is the amount per student that each school gets, instead of these line items. And the governor is really interested in some specific line items, like allocating money for the remedial reading that needs to happen. The thing that's wrong with putting it below the line from the perspective of the school districts is that then you have to go and apply to get that money. And if we've got, let's say, an $8 million line item for remediation for kids who can't read, and every school has to apply for it, then what happens to the schools who don't get it? So why don't we just put this money into the funding formula and tell schools, you have to provide remediation for those kids?
Yeah.
And we did this in years past where we put physical education. We allocated $7 or $8 million over a period of 4 or 5 years below the line for PE. So the schools who wanted PE had to apply to the public education department and get their allocation for PE. Well, why not just keep putting the money in the funding formula and require PE?
Yeah.
It's a philosophical approach, and the school districts prefer, give us enough money per student to do our work. If you want to tell us we got to do some other things, okay, but give us that money and don't make us go through all the bureaucracy of trying to get that money from public education.
Right, because of course then each school has to hire or allocate more time for administrators to write the grants to apply for the money that they could have just had anyway.
Right, right.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Adequately fund the funding formula. That's what the school districts of New Mexico want.
Linda Siegel is with us every Friday during the 60-day legislative session with the Legislative Update. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. See you next week.
See you next week. We're going to take a little break, and Diane Karp will be with us in just a moment. Please stay tuned. And I'd like now to welcome Diane Karp. She's the Executive Director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. She's with us many Fridays speaking of the arts. Hello.
Hello, hello. Good morning, and that's just what we're going to do. We're going to speak of the arts and more.
And kitties.
And I'll bet the first thing that we should do is open with a conversation about the kitty of the week.
The kitty of the week was rescued from a trailer park in Las Vegas, New Mexico, and her name is Holly. She's cute, playful, and sweet. She gets along with dogs and has befriended another cat in her foster home. She's a beautiful girl with a medium-length coat and a Duluth tortoise shell look or markings. If you're interested in adopting Holly, who sounds like a great cat, call 316-2281. That's 505-316-2281. Or email askfelinesandfriends@yahoo.com. Or just look up Felines and Friends New Mexico.
I like the Duluth tortoise shell.
I know, Duluth tortoise shell. I'm just reading what they tell me.
That's a good one. That's a new one for me. It makes me think about the visuals.
I know, but it's like those sort of light dappled dachshunds.
The dappled dachshunds?
The dappled dachshunds. I have a dark dappled dachshund, but they're the light ones.
I like
where
the
they
dark
have
dappled dachshund because it's alliterative and it makes me happy. So there's amazing stuff going on this week, as there always is in Santa Fe, and we're so lucky to live here and have all of these amazing options. And this week, one of the things that I think is really interesting is that tonight the Capital High School Capital Arts and Production Academy Theater is doing a revisit of the Laramie Project. You know,
that's already coming up.
Yes, it's tonight, and
oh
it's
goodness.
Being performed. It's a play by Moises Kaufman, and it's really about the Shepherd disaster.
Matthew Shepherd.
The Matthew Shepherd disaster. You were talking about gender issues earlier with Linda, and it's alive and well. And one of the things that we really need to take a step back and value is that the arts provide us with a remarkable way of reconsidering, revisiting, and expanding the discourse around serious issues in contemporary culture and in history. And the play allows us to sort of sit and think quietly and contemplatively, as well as getting pissed and aggressive and engaged around the issue of sexual hatred and bullying. And Capital High School has been really focusing on how you deal with interpersonal violence and aggressiveness and bullying. So if anyone is around and interested, it should be a fascinating performance tonight at 7 o'clock at the Brian Fant Theater at 4851 Paseo del Sol. There is a cost. It is also being performed tomorrow night. But I think that the cost is going to go back to the school to support theatrical engagement around serious issues. So
excellent.
A good thing to do. If you're not up for watching high schoolers performing theater around these kinds of issues, the Lannan Foundation in Pursuit of Cultural Freedom series tonight is presenting Palestinian human rights activist Omar Barghouti in conversation with Amy Goodman. And
yes,
that's also at 7 o'clock, but that one's at the Lensic. And Omar Barghouti is one of the most philosophically sound and historically complete scholar dealing with the present Palestinian issues. So if you want to hear a very wise and very sort of broad approach to it, that would be a wonderful thing to do. And it once again, the Lannan Foundation provides us with so many different alternative voices.
It's so true, and doing wonderful work, and I don't think there's ever been one of those lectures that I didn't come out feeling like I really learned something.
Yes, and I think that's really the critical mass. It's not raving lunatics. It's deeply historically based and scholarly speakers.
And it's not just speaking to the choir. Yeah. What do they call it?
Preaching to the choir, yes. So I think that should be a wonderful thing.
On Sunday at 11 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore, a look at the environmental history of the Rio Grande and a conversation with David Bacon, host of KSFR's Living on the Edge, and Steve Harris, executive director of the Rio Grande Restoration Project, which is a nonprofit which is dedicated to restoring ecosystems along the Rio Grande.
Yes.
That is,
and the whole watershed.
Right. And that's presented by Journey Santa Fe. They're doing great work, and you can find out more about them at journeysantafe.com. And then on Monday, February 4th, at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore, The Moral Underpinnings of 21st Century Power, a conversation with Craig Barnes, host of KSFR's Our Times with Craig Barnes, and Larry Rasmussen, author of Earth Honoring Faith, Religious Ethics in a New Key, and I'm going to be interviewing him on Monday morning.
Oh, he's so smart, and the book is so beautifully written.
Yeah, very much so.
That should be great. If you're up for other kinds of things to do tonight, I recommend that you think a little bit about stopping off at the StoryCorps mobile booth. And if you don't want to do it this afternoon or tonight, StoryCorps is going to be here until, I think, the 6th of February.
Yeah. So I heard they're totally booked up. They have a waiting list.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So check in to make sure, if you're around, that people don't fail to show up.
Right.
Saturday, in concert, we've got just the most wonderful diversity of presentations. On Saturday night at 7:30 at Gig Performance Space, which is over there on 2nd Street, they're going to be presenting Catfish Hodge. And Catfish Hodge is described as an emotionally charged performer who does work that broadly expands on all of the blues in America. Sometimes bluesmen are sort of narrow in their focus. Catfish Hodge is one wild ride and definitely worth going to see over there at Gig. And if that's not what you're in the mood for, then from 7 to 11 at the Rail Yard Performance Center is going to be an evening of Balkan music. And
nice.
For those of you who don't know where the Balkan countries are, it's that sort of Middle European or Southeastern European, it varies, of the nations that used to make up Yugoslavia. So it was the cause of the First World War, if you believe in the Serbo-Croatian attack. And it was, it remains an area that's pretty volatile, but has enormously rich cultural history.
And Bulgaria and Romania.
Bulgaria and Romania as well, exactly. So that's something that you can put on your Saturday evening.
And where's that?
It's going to be presented at the Rail Yard.
Okay.
And it's the local Balkan band, the Santa Fe University of Art and Design's Middle East ensemble and their Czech megaphone. So it's a kind of wonderful combination of professional and amateurs. And we feel very strongly about amateurs in this town because they're the people, and the origin of the word is, who do it from the heart.
That's right.
So they may not be professional, but boy, they have a powerful voice.
On Thursday at 6 o'clock, going back to Collected Works Bookstore, yeah. New Mexico Literary Arts Gratitude Award Poetry Reading.
Ooh.
New Mexico Literary Arts is a nonprofit in Española, and they present awards to individual poets and to organizations that support the literary arts in the region. And the 2012 recipients are the Society of the Muse of the Southwest, which is Somos, and poet James McGrath. And so it's going to be an evening filled with poetry readings from the award winners, as well as members of the board of the New Mexico Literary Arts group. And then on Friday at 6 o'clock, author Margaret Wrinkle reads from her debut novel, Wash.
That's this Friday as in today or next Friday?
Oh, no, that's the next That's next Friday.
Yeah, that's
okay,
what
we'll
I
talk
thought.
About that next week. They put it on my list here, but I think it's good, ladies and gentlemen, to keep that open Friday a week from today, mm-hmm. because I read that book, and I have to tell you, it is one of the best novels I have ever
about
read
slavery.
In my whole life, about anything. It is a tremendously rich, beautifully written, deeply knowledgeable, deeply felt book. It is a perfect book.
Yeah, the amount of research and the amount of thought that has gone into it is quite remarkable. So put that on your list for next
yes.
Friday. But while we're talking about this week, the CCA on Sunday at 3 p.m. is going to be showing a classic film. It's part of the Santa Fe Jewish Film Festival, and it's a 1939 staging of Tevye, Shalom Aleichem's Tales of the Shtetl. And that's the story that's at the core of, story that remains at the core of Fiddler on the Roof and those kinds of plays.
That's
so
right.
That would be a really interesting thing to do on Sunday.
And then Gila, a fundraising event with Michael Berman, is happening tomorrow, Saturday, from 5 to 8. There's a reception and silent auction and talk. And let's see.
At 516 Arts down in Albuquerque.
At 516 Arts down
and
in Albuquerque.
This is a fundraiser that really needs support. First of all, his publication, the book, The Gila, is gorgeous.
Extraordinary.
These are black and white photographs, and for me, Michael Berman has a very important role because I came from the East Coast where things are wet and green and you're near the ocean and there's lots of water and rain. And when I first came, I found the desert environment pretty hostile. And it seemed, for the most part, empty and pretty dead. And early on in my tenure here in Santa Fe, I met Michael Berman and we looked through his photographs and it was literally an example of allowing the art to help you to see better. And it was his early black and white photographs of the desert that showed me how much life and beauty and texture and diversity there is where I only saw empty sand. So hats off to Michael Berman. It's a fundraiser for the Gila Wilderness and a fundraiser for the 516 Art Space.
Excellent.
So get down there. You can buy one of Michael's prints. You can buy a copy of the book. It's all good.
It's all good. And I got an email telling me that Sunny Cooper, artist and writer, will read from her current novel, Ankh, and her new Star Trek novel, I Celebrate Myself. And she will,
so Santa Fe.
It is. And she will share her experiences with the production cast and crew of Star Trek and her adventures as William Shatner's fan liaison and publicist.
Ah.
This is at the gallery space at La Tienda in El Dorado from 2 to 4 tomorrow. For more information, 466-6661.
Speaking of Star Trek, on Monday, in concert, is Intronaut. It's a Los Angeles-based, and I love this, experimental psych metal band. It's called As In We, and they're going to be performing at Santa Fe Soul Staging Grill. Opens at 7 p.m., and that's one of those wonderful opportunities to hear music that you probably wouldn't cross otherwise. If you're in the mood for something, a little more art-based and visual art-based and serious, the Santa Fe Art Institute is going to be presenting Blandine Chavan. She is the director of the Musée des Beaux-Arts in Nantes. It's a wonderful little piece at the front of the Pasatiempo that'll tell you all about it. And she's going to be giving a lecture on the relationship between a French artist, Camille Brun, and a French writer, Michel Boutour. And the two of them, the artist and the writer, held an ongoing communication and correspondence between Nantes and New Mexico. So that's at 6 o'clock. It is not at Tipton Hall. We are not doing our lectures at Tipton Hall anymore. They are now going to be at the Santa Fe Art Institute in the lounge. Cozy, more like a salon. We're really looking forward to it. And if you come on Monday night at 6 p.m., you'll also get to see the extended exhibition called Shifting Baselines about water in the Southwest. Another great thing going on Monday is a marvelous presentation called The Early Peopling of America from Time Immemorial. And that's part of the Southwest Seminars Ancient Sites and Ancient Stories Lecture Series. Same time, 6 p.m. at the Hotel Santa Fe.
And on February 5th, which is Tuesday, there is a forum called Drone Attacks and Ethical Questions. It's a public forum presented by Robert Naiman, Policy Director of Just Foreign Policy in Washington, D.C. It's free. It's at 7 o'clock at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation on Barcelona at the corner of Galisteo Street in Santa Fe. And following his comments, the speaker will have a question and answer with the audience. And the forum will also feature a brief drama by Doug Stewart titled There Be Drones and presented by the Unitarian Universalist Players.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a serious engagement.
Very,
definitely worth
very important.
Taking time to think seriously about what we're doing out there in the world.
Yep.
On Thursday is the sneak preview for one of the things that I love most about living in a small but very gifted and talented town like Santa Fe. It's the sneak preview for the 12th iteration of Benchwarmers.
Yay!
And if you've never participated or you've never gone to support it, please, please, please come out. It all takes place at the Santa Fe Playhouse, which is the most perfect little theater down on De Vargas Street in Center City. And I'm going to cough.
You're listening to Speaking of the Arts.
Damned flu. Oh. Sorry, for all of you out there who are suffering with this respiratory flu, you have my deepest sympathy.
Yeah.
And a little bit of phlegm.
Okay, we're going to go on. Let's take a look. Of course, the ones that I have are for 2 weeks from now.
No, I've got lots of things to talk about, and I apologize.
No.
A really remarkable project called Al-Mutanabi Street starts here, is an international project that bears witness to what we have as a society in crisis. Al-Mutanabi Street was a Baghdad street of booksellers that sold books from all over the world in so many different languages. And part of the crisis with the war in Iraq, of course, was that we, as we always do in war, we lose the cultural underpinnings of our world. And people destroy things because they're different than the way in which they see the world. But the beauty of culture is it provides a very diverse and complicated history of culture and of who we are in the world. And so the idea of what went on in Mali with the destruction in Timbuktu of art and culture that was opposing the Islamic force, we need to be able to take a giant step back and say, we may not agree with you, but by God, you have the right because you represent a moment and a perspective in history. So this is an exhibit of work that's being presented at Santa Fe at Tipton Hall. Is a lecture at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. There's an exhibit and a panel discussion that's going to go on Thursday. I lost my place when I was coughing. Another really interesting thing that's going on Thursday, Thomas Antonio is going to be talking about at the Santa Fe Botanical Garden and the talk is at the Museum of International Folk Art. And he's talking about John Bartram. John Bartram, who was one of my favorites, was America's first botanist. He was a farmer, he was uneducated, and he spent his entire life, brilliant as he was, completely compromised by the fact that he didn't have a degree. He established a botanical garden in Philadelphia that still exists and records the entire history of the development of American botany. He took a lot of American plant species back to Europe. They didn't know at the time that they were probably making mistakes, but that's another story. He's going to be talking about John Bartram as this amateur scientist and botanist. It should be an extraordinary lecture. It takes place at 2 p.m. Over there at MOIFA.
One of the things that I think is so interesting about that is there's a movement right now called citizen science, in which, for example, ornithologists are recruiting amateur bird watchers because it turns out a lot of them are actually better at seeing birds than the ornithologists themselves, and they can collect excellent data, and you can even get children who are collecting first-rate data. There are children who have discovered species that were unknown to people who were experts in whatever that genus was, because
Absolutely.
They're close to the ground and they're looking at the bugs or whatever it is. So
the very idea that you do something because you love it is as powerful oftentimes as the people who are trained to see things, because they're trained to look for particular patterns. And people who are just looking often see things that don't fit the patterns.
A writing workshop is coming starting on February 12th, but you can register now, called Write Out Loud, Speak Your Silence. And it's a writing workshop to mine the creative silences within and transform them into short fiction and memoir pieces that are then presented at a group reading. Everyone is welcome, but there's a limit to the number of people. So for more information, you can email writeoutloud13, write with a W, a W-R-T-E, outloud13 at gmail.com, or call area code 609-651-5840. And we hope you're listening with pencils and pens in your hands, ladies
and gentlemen.
That's
right. And if you're not, you can probably...
You can write to me.
Or you can pull up Write Out Loud on your Google or your Bing search. It'll give you the information. Another wonderful thing that's going on in Albuquerque, not only the Saturday 516 Arts and Michael Berman project, but the Portland Cello Project is an ensemble with the most wide-ranging variation of classical to hip-hop to rock, all done on cellos. They are amazing. I've seen them in Portland. And 7:30 on Tuesday, the 5th, they are going to be performing at the Outpost Performance Space down at 210 Yale Boulevard. Definitely something to put on your list of things to do, a different way of engaging around music in Santa Fe area.
Excellent. So I have run out of items. Do you have any more?
Well, I have some films that I want to recommend to people. One of the things that I love best is that the screen often presents the Oscar-nominated shorts, and they are of two different varieties. One is live action, and one is animation. And I have to recommend to the world that they check out the animation section. The entire group of nominated animations runs about 41 minutes. They are fantastic. And
I love animation.
So do I. But what happens in the past, and there's a wonderful little review here in the Pasatiempo. What happens in the past is the animations and the shorts reflect the mood of the nation and the world. And they tended to sort of go gray and dark and angry between 2007 and the present. This year's are fabulous. Some of them are funny, some of them are poignant, some of them are sort of historical, but they're the kind of animations that for the first time in many years, you can take your kids. You can take a friend who's not looking to come out feeling worse than when they went in, no matter what they're learning. And the other is the live action, which spans the globe, but I think is definitely worth checking out. So if you go to your PASA, you will see when the animations are being performed and when the live actions are being performed. I recommend that you take them in.
Excellent. And what's happening, so speaking of movies, what else is happening at the screen?
At the screen?
Oh, I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah, good, tell me.
Encore Sunday, The Marriage of Figaro, Royal Opera House, London.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday at 11 in the morning, you get to see and hear opera on their fine, fine screen and sound system. And let's see. There's the other things. Okay, Held Over, Barbara, which is a German film from the director of Jerichow. Could that be?
I think it's Jericho.
C-H-O-W, just saying.
I don't know. But also, They're Holding Over Any Day Now.
Which is a perfect film. Yay!
Powerful, historic, beautiful acting. It is so wrenchingly important. And again, addresses gender issues and sexual identity and the fact that all American citizens are not equal. All Americans, all human beings are not equal.
Especially in the 70s.
Within the justice system.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that we need to work a little harder on.
We need to figure
out how to deal with equality in a very direct and a very honest way.
Okay, so just this Barbara, this movie Barbara, is winner of Best Director Prize at this year's Berlin Film Festival and is the latest film from Christian Petzold and is the simmering, impeccably crafted Cold War thriller.
It's kind of a scary, creepy
film.
So those
Did you see it?
Yes. For those of you who like scary and a little creepy, it's a good one.
All right.
A well-made scary creepy.
All right. And did we talk about the CCA Cinematheque?
We talked about the Jewish Film Festival being there, but we didn't talk about the other films. I went last night to watch Bicycle Dreams, and I did it largest part because I support the Santa Fe Bicycle Coalition. We need to make Santa Fe safer and better for people on bicycles. We all talk about environmental responsibility, and yet we live in a city where we climb in our cars to go three blocks most of the time. Bicycles would change the quality of our life and the quality of our air and would really be a major improvement.
I'll tell you something. If the city of Santa Fe were to make a commitment to bike paths on the streets and around, you know, not just along the railroad tracks, but really make a commitment to safe bicycle travel, I wouldn't get in my car again except to buy groceries.
Well, and I feel exactly the same way. I was run off the road two or three times the first year I was here because I lived in a city. I lived in Philadelphia, and I actually lived and worked in New York. Biking was safer there because you had ways of getting around. But let me be clear here and say that the Santa Fe Trails Department, headed up by the great Leroy Pacheco, has done an enormous amount to create walking and biking trails that traverse the city. So they're urban trails. The problem is that in places you have to, like, get off your bike and cross St. Francis Drive. And they're not perfect. But they are such an improvement over what was available when I first came. But Bicycle Dreams is about the race across America.
Ah.
It is the most enormous and frightening and challenging extreme sports event in the world.
There's a film called Only the Young that starts tonight.
Oh, that's the skateboard.
And it's a documentary following the day-to-day adventures of three young people living in a small California desert town. Skaters, but not the punk variety, as it says here. Each share their lives and loves candidly with the camera. And this is just a portrait of America today, basically. So another thing to go see, and it's time to go.
I can't believe it. Well, there's lots for all of you to take in this week. So get your calendar out, mark the things that are of interest to you, take advantage of all the richness of the arts and culture and history and science available to you at Santa Fe.
And if you haven't seen Chasing Ice, you got to go see it while it's still here. That's also at the CCA.
Yeah.
Diane Karp is the executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. She's with us pretty much every other Friday, speaking of the arts. I think Rob DeWalt will be back next week. We'll see you after that. Yay, Rob DeWalt. Shout out to Rob DeWalt. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. After that, jazz, and a big shout-out to Marilyn LeBlanc, sound engineer at KSFR. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Diane Karp.
Adios.
Hasta la vista.
Si.
Ciao.